Secrets of the UFO by Don Elkins with Carla Rucut. May, 1977. Primarily, contactees are normal people of average intelligence and background. Each year produces more of them. Few of these people receive or desire publicity. 9, Chapter 1, A Very Strange Phenomenon. I've been studying paranormal phenomenon for 25 years, and for the past 14 years I've specialized in unraveling the contactee riddle. You will find in reading through this book that it requires some background in paranormal studies. The first three chapters of the book are intended to function as a synopsis of this background, and the bibliography is available to those who wish to pursue this field in greater depth. A great deal of apparently unrelated material begins to substantively add to the evidence available in the UFO contactee literature. Once this mountain of contactee data is condensed, I am now in a position to make such a condensation, and this analysis of the contactee story turns into an explanation of the nature, purpose, origin, and ultimate objective of at least one large group of UFOs. The entire situation regarding the contactees reminds me of something which the late Dr. James E. McDonald said to Congress in 1968. He was reporting to the House Committee on Aeronautics and Astronautics on his conclusions regarding UFOs. He described a situation in northern France years ago, where many peasants reported stones falling from the sky. Since the reporters were dumb and unscientific, they were ignored at first. Finally, a scientist took the reports seriously and investigated the thing fully. Thus was born the science of meteoritics. Dr. McDonald suggested to Congress that in dealing with UFO reports, we now face a very similar situation in science. We have tended to ignore it because it didn't make any sense, it definitely defies any explanation, and hence the situation has evolved where we can't get going because we aren't already going. To consider the case of Travis Walton of Snowflake, Arizona, taken aboard a UFO on November 5, 1975, in plain sight of six witnesses. The witnesses were given lie detector tests. All tests showed the witnesses were telling the truth. Travis himself showed up 5 days later. He was 12 miles from the place he had been taken on board. He had a story to tell that involved his waking up inside the ship and finding several very odd-looking creatures examining him, as well as four perfectly normal-looking human types. Now, these details are pretty solid. Dr. James Harder, director of research for the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, personally investigated the case and stated that he felt there was no hoax involved. The lie detector tests given to the witnesses support the data. All indications of this contact is authentic. In spite of this, the news coverage was so conditioned by the old ridicule lid of the 1950s that few Americans found out about it until months after the occurrence. 10, Chapter 1, A Very Strange Phenomenon. Various UFO research groups such as APRO and MUFON, for complete listings, see bibliography, put out many reports, such as that of the Travis Walton case, which the national press passes by. And so the underground becomes more and more certain that UFOs are real and are communicating with us, while the cultural community as a whole continues to not know much of the important data. This gap in knowledge was at one time at least in great part attributable to the U.S. government's handling of investigations into the phenomena. In the late 1940s and early 50s, when the sightings and stories were gaining momentum, the Air Force, like almost everyone else, was mystified. In addition, they were responsible for the safety of American skies. They were embarrassed and concerned about these unidentified flying objects. These were the days of backyard bomb shelters. The national feeling was that Russia might well launch a nuclear attack. So it is quite understandable that the Air Force was extremely upset about their inability to explain the phenomena. The result was that the UFO phenomena was brushed off, officially, as being a ridiculous fantasy. In this atmosphere, the reliable witness was liable to refrain from reporting his UFO experience, because it might damage his reputation. Dr. J. Allen Hayek spoke about this problem in 1953. Nothing constructive is accomplished. For science in the long run, by mere ridicule and the implication that sightings are the products of bird brains and intellectual flyweights. Ridicule is not part of the scientific method and people should not be taught that it is. 3. After Project Blue Book came into its own, the Air Force became gradually more confident that the UFOs were not a threat to American security, but by this time the habit of ridicule of UFO sightings and sighters was well set. Gradually, the official nature of the ridicule lid has vanished, although still today there is a military injunction against servicemen reporting UFOs before they have been debriefed. But the habit of ridicule is still in effect, and has continued to successfully stop the free flow of information on the subject that is so necessary for the average citizen to have before he can really decide for himself about UFOs. As Jacobs notes in his book on the history of the UFO controversy, Hayek first polled 44 astronomers for their interest in the UFO phenomena, and found that only 17% of them were interested. He wrote them, then, about several particularly unusual and provocative sightings, and re-polled for interest, nearly all of their. 11, Chapter 1, A Very Strange Phenomenon. Astronomers had become interested in UFOs. As Hayek said, their general lethargy is due to lack of information. For in countries where UFO sighting information has been as freely distributed as any other news, there is a much more energetic feeling among the general populace about the significance of UFOs. There is a basic problem encountered by those trying to use the scientific method to investigate UFOs. When one begins to investigate a new phenomenon, he needs to start from some aspect of the phenomenon which is linked to present theory. The UFO phenomena does not easily compute on the calculators of our present system of physical measurements and predictive judgment. I think that it is this reason more than any other which discourages most scientists and keeps even interested men from undertaking active investigation. Ufology is a frustrating discipline to a scientist. Since it is already unfashionable to be a UFO investigator, this frustration completes the decision. And only the most daring of the scientific community will link their names with UFO studies. This set of circumstances is also true of the whole field of paranormal research, of course, of which UFOs is properly a part. It has been my personal experience that many of the researchers in ufology will, while appearing most conservative for the record, confide in sympathetic company their more esoteric theories. Some of the more experienced of these people are truly daring the outer limits of knowledge in general. I think it's high time that these outer limits be made more generally known. I've been at this pursuit of UFO understanding for over 25 years now. I've tried to maintain a totally open-minded approach to the study, considering no piece of evidence too small or too ridiculous to consider. The theory which has gradually emerged from this approach may seem a bit wild or absurd, but it is dealing with a wild and absurd bunch of data. The one thing that recommends the theory is that almost all reports which come in day by day seem to fit into it very well. One thing to remember, almost everything which we now accept as normal in our present technology would have been considered a wild and absurd impossibility a scant 100 years ago. We do not know how many millennia ahead of our present understanding the UFOs might be. I have chosen not to abide within the approved scientific method of verification of accepted data within the boundaries of currently accepted scientific opinion because this method has proven a tool ineffectual in. 12, Chapter 1, A Very Strange Phenomenon. Dealing with this phenomena, I make the assumption that the reason for this lack is that the system is set up to investigate the present level of reality within our technological and scientific nexus of thought. I make the further assumption that the nexus of thinking or technology which underlies the UFO manifestations may not have any close connection to our present Earthman's philosophy of reality. History is replete with examples of the events in which reality itself proved unconformable with the current scientific and philosophical thinking. I think it is happening again. We thought that the Earth was flat at one time. Less than 400 years ago, Giordano Bruno was burned at the stake for suggesting that the Earth revolved around the Sun. Now, again, there really does seem to be a growing amount of evidence pointing to the existence of a totally different type of reality than is generally appreciated by our philosophy. If you ask anyone you meet on the street whether he believes UFOs are real, Over half will answer, yes, they probably are. Most people have a lively interest in the subject and when a case is covered in their newspaper, read it and ponder it. But because most UFO cases are not covered in newspapers, the general public does not receive a great percentage of the very prevalent UFO contact information. The lack of coverage is not the only reason that many UFO cases go unreported. There are other reasons. 1. The person who is contacted by the UFO is afraid to tell about his experience, because he fears ridicule. 2. The contactee has no knowledge of UFO investigating organizations, and receives only incredulity from the people to whom he does tell his story. He would like to share his experience but does not feel he will be believed. 3. The contactee may not remember his contact experience consciously, because of a memory block affected by the UFO noughts. UFO researchers have found these three causes for silent contactees to prevail again and again, and it is theorized that a large percentage of contact cases are never discovered by investigators. The pioneer ufologist, Dr. J. Allen Hynek, has estimated that around the world there are about 100 UFO sightings every day, though most of these remain unreported. But there are still an incredible number of cases that we do know about. There is at present such a tremendous number of well-documented cases of contact with UFO occupants that Dr. Hynek has stated that it's high time we stopped looking for eggs, and started making the omelet. The Problem, 13, Chapter 1, a very strange phenomenon is, of course, that these eggs are so weird that we're afraid to crack them open to make the omelet. This book is intended as an attempt to make this omelet, even if its taste is offensively pungent to some theorists' palates. But before I begin, I would like to look at just a few eggs with you. I want you to get an idea of just how strange these eggs really are, so I've taken a sample of some 15 cases, all of them UFO sightings which include a close contact with the UFO occupants. These few cases are taken from the many which are reported by the investigating organizations such as APRO, MUFON, and Flying Saucer Review. Look in the bibliography at the back of the book for a list of these information sources complete with addresses. I will not bore you with the well-known cases of the 1950s. This is a small sampling of more recent cases, in order to establish how common these UFO contact reports are, and to give you the flavor of the concoction these eggs are going to make. Case number 1, date, 1963, place, Fern Creek, Key. Investigators, Colonel Vern Yarny, Key. Air National Guard, D.T. Elkins, independent investigator for young boys, aged 5 to 12, observed a disc-shaped craft as it landed behind a small woods near where they were playing. A humanoid clad in a space suit, about 4 feet tall, emerged from the woods. Two of the boys threw dirt clods at the entity to provoke it into some action. The entity then shot them with a small black rod, producing a tingling sensation and slight pain. When the boys were individually questioned, all 4 stories matched. The description of the humanoid which they gave matched information in NICAP files of more than 200 other sightings in the Ohio River Valley area in considerable and exact detail. The boy's mother stated that she got a message in her head, telepathic, to call the University of Louisville shortly after she called the National Guard to report the sighting. Small footprints and clear landing marks were found. A day later, 2 unidentified men visited the landing site and eradicated the landing evidence. Although they stated that they were from the University of Louisville, this was checked out and found to be untrue. Case number 2, date, 1965, and continuing, to the present. 14, Chapter 1, a very strange phenomenon, place, Spain. Investigators, Antonio Ribera and Rafael Farriols, both ufologists in Spain. A planet called Amo began contacting various people in Spain in 1965. The people were well respected and educated, a writer, an engineer, a lawyer, etc. The contacts would be by telephone, and the contactee was invited to ask questions of the Amites. Later, a report answering the question would come in the mail. These reports were signed with a thumbprint bearing a distinctive mark much like the alchemical symbol for Uranus, an H with a shorter vertical line through the bar. The contactees were told that the armor craft would be at a certain place on a certain date. The craft showed up on schedule and pictures were taken of it. On the bottom of the craft there is the crossbarred H symbol. The reports have continued to come in through the intervening years, and speak on many technical subjects, such as physics and biology. The armor words which are used in these reports, when collected together and considered, form a self-consistent language structure. They say that they are from a planet which revolves around a star which they have tentatively identified as being our Wolf 424, and that they were first attracted to our solar system by a radio signal which was sent from Earth in 1934. They gave the frequency of the signal, 413.44 megacycles. Between the ages of 14 and 16 the vocal cords of the children become sclerosed, and for this reason most of the adult inhabitants of Amo are unable to talk and must use telepathy. These Amo reports are an exceptionally interesting instance of UFO contact, and they continue at the present time. Flying Saucer Review occasionally updates this continuing story. Case number 3, date, May the 4th to the 9th, 1969, place, Pobedro, Brazil. Investigator, Halvio B. Alexo of Sicani, a research group of Belo Horizonte, Brazil. José Antonio de Silva, a 24-year-old soldier of excellent personal character and reputation, was abducted by small, red-bearded humanoids who forcibly took him aboard their craft. During his confinement aboard their strange vessel, a fair, tall, human-looking being appeared to him, though the smaller aliens did not seem to be able to see him. This being warned D.A. 15, Chapter 1, a very strange phenomenon, Silva, of a danger which involved the whole of mankind, which might be avoided if man on Earth changed his ways. D.A. Silva was told that intervention by unknown beings, and possible calamities, might be involved. 12 days after his abduction, D.A. Silva was awakened by a sudden urge to go outside. He did so and saw three of the red-bearded aliens, who had apparently summoned him telepathically. He quickly re-entered his house and locked the door against them, for he felt that part of the danger to come might involve them. Case number 4, date, summer, 1973, places, all over Pennsylvania. Investigator, Stan Gordon, MUFON State Director. Because this is a report of 118 separate contacts with unknown creatures, the date and place have to be generalized. These reports vary somewhat but have the primary details more or less in common. The salient feature of these cases is the creature or creatures who are sighted. They are hairy, ape-like beings with glowing eyes and apparent ears, large noses, fang-like teeth, and the long arms of an ape. Where Gordon was able to take footprint casts, the print was a large and three-toed track. The sightings were, in the majority, in wooded areas or near rural or small town homes. During the sighting, animals would be still, but before and after a sighting, both animals and small children acted as though they were quite disturbed, cows huddling, dogs barking, children crying all night. These creatures have been sighted often in connection with UFO sightings, have been seen entering and leaving UFOs, and on occasion a telepathic communication from a source connected with the creatures has been reported. In three of these encounters, a creature has been shot. One was shot with a .30-06, see case number 6. Another was shot with a 16-gauge shotgun at close range, and the third with a .38 pistol. The latter two creatures both disappeared in a flash of light, like a photo flashbulb going off, on being shot. Case number 5, date, the 10th of November 1973, place, Pascagoula, Mississippi. Investigators, Dr. J.